The Eagle's Shadow by James Branch Cabell. 15. After a vituperative half hour or so, Mr. Woods was hungry. He came back towards Selwood, and upon the terrace in front of the house he found Kathleen Saumarez. During the warm weather, one corner of the terrace had been converted, by means of gay red and white awnings, into a sort of living room. There were chairs, tables, sofa cushions, bowls of roses, and any number of bright-colored rugs. Altogether was a cozy place, and the glowing hues of its furnishings were very becoming to Mrs. Saumarez, who sat there writing industriously. It was a thought embarrassing. They had avoided one another yesterday, rather obviously, both striving to put off a necessary awkward meeting. Now it had come, and now, somehow, their eyes met for a moment, and they laughed frankly, and the awkwardness was gone. "Kathleen," said Mr. Woods with conviction, "you're a dear."
"You broke my heart," said she demurely, "but I'm going to forgive you."
Mrs. Saumarez was not striving to be clever now, and heavens, thought Billy, how much nicer she was like this. Wasn't the same woman. Her thin cheeks flushed arbutus-like, and her rather metallic voice was grown low and gentle. Billy brought memories with him, you see, and for the moment she was Kathleen Epps again. Kathleen Epps in the first flush of youth, eager, trustful, and joyous-hearted, as he had known her long ago. Since then, the poor woman had eaten of the bread of dependence, and had found it salt enough. She had paid for it daily, enduring 1,000 petty slights, 1,000 petty insults, and smiling under them as only women can. But she had forgotten now that shrewd Kathleen Saumarez, who must earn her livelihood as best she might. She smiled frankly, a purely unprofessional smile.
"I was sorry when I heard you were coming," she said irrelevantly, "but I'm glad now."
Mr. Woods, I grieve to relate, was still holding her hand in his. There stirred in his pulses the thrill Kathleen Epps had always wakened. A thrill of memory now, a mere wraith of emotion. He was thinking of a certain pink-cheeked girl with crinkly black-brown hair and eyes that he had likened to chrysoberyls, and he wondered whimsically what had become of her. This was not she. This was assuredly not Kathleen, for this woman had a large mouth. A humorous and kindly mouth, it was true, but undeniably a large one, whereas Kathleen's mouth had been quite perfect, and rather diminutive than otherwise. Hadn't he rhymed of it often enough to know? They stood gazing at one another for a long time, and in the back of Billy's brain, lines of his old verses sang themselves to a sad little tune, the verses that reproved the idiocy of all other poets, who had very foolishly written their sonnets to other women. And yet, as the jingle pointed out, had these poets ever strayed in thy path, they had not made random rhymes of Arabella, songs of Dolly, hymns of Stella, lays of Lelage or Chloris, not of Daphne nor of Doris, Florimel nor Amaryllis, nor of Phillida nor Phyllis, were their wanton melodies. But all of these, all their melodies had been of thee, Kathleen. Would they had been? Billy thought it improbable. The verses were very silly. And recalling the big, blundering boy who had written them, Billy began to wonder, somewhat forlornly, whether he, too, had vanished. He and the girl he had gone mad for both seemed rather mythical, legendary as King Pepin.
"Yes," said Mrs. Saumarez.
And oh, she startled him.
"I fancy they're both quite dead by now, Billy," she cried earnestly. "Don't laugh at them. Don't laugh at those dear, foolish children. I couldn't bear that, Billy."
"Kathleen," said Mr. Woods in admiration, "you're a witch." "I wasn't laughing, though, my dear. I was developing quite a twilight mood over them. A plaintive, old lettery sort of mood, you know." She sighed a little.
"Yes, I know."
Then her eyelids flickered in a parody of Kathleen's glance that Billy noted with a queer tenderness.
"Come and talk to me, Billy," she commanded. "I'm an early bird this morning, and entitled to the very biggest and best-looking worm I can find. You're only a worm, you know. We're all worms. Mr. Jukesbury told me so last night, making an exception in my favor, for it appears I'm an angel. He was amorously inclined last night, the tipsy old fraud. It's shameless, Billy, the amount of money he gets out of Miss Hugonin for the deserving poor. Do you know, I rather fancy he classes himself under that head? And I grant you he's poor enough.
But deserving?" Mrs. Saumarez snapped her fingers eloquently. "Eh? Shark, eh?" queried Mr. Woods, in some discomfort. She nodded.
"He is as bad as Sarah Haggage," she informed him, "and everybody knows what a bloodsucker she is. The Haggage is a disease, Billy, that all witch women are exposed to, more easily caught than the pestilence, and the taker runs presently mad. Depend upon it, Billy. Those two will have every penny they can get out of your uncle's money. Peggy's so generous, he pleaded. She wants to make everybody happy. Bring about a general millennium, you know.
She pays dearly enough for her fancies, said Miss Somers, in a hard voice.
Then, after a little, she cried suddenly. Oh, Billy, Billy, it shames to me to think of how we lie to her, and toady to her, and lead her on from one mad scheme to another, all for the sake of the money we can pilfer incidentally. We're all arrant hypocrites, you know. I'm no better than the others, Billy. Not a bit better. But my husband left me so poor, and I had always been accustomed to the pretty things of life. And I couldn't give them up, Billy. I love them too dearly, so I'd lie and toady and write driveling talks about things I don't understand for driveling women to listen to, and I still have the creature comforts of life. I pawn my self-respect for them. That's all. Such a little price to pay, isn't it, Billy?
She spoke in a sort of frenzy. I dare say that at the onset she wanted Mr. Woods to know the worst of her, knowing he could not fail to discover it in time. Billy brought memories with him, you see, and this shrewd, hard woman wanted somehow, more than anything else in the world, that he should think well of her. So she babbled out the whole pitiful story, waiting in a kind of terror to see contempt and disgust awaken in his eyes. But he merely said, I see, very slowly, and his eyes were kindly. He couldn't be angry with her somehow. That pink-cheeked, crinkly-haired girl stood between them and shielded her. He was only very, very sorry.
And Canaston? He asked after a little. Mrs. Somers flushed. Mr. Canaston is a man of great genius, she said quickly. Of course, Miss Hugonin is glad to assist him in publishing his books. It's an honor to her that he permits it. They have to be published privately, you know, as the general public isn't capable of appreciating such dainty little masterpieces. Oh, don't make any mistake, Billy. Mr. Canaston is a very wonderful and very admirable man.
Yes. He struck me as being an unusually nice chap, said Mr. Woods, untruthfully. I dare say they'll be very happy.
Who?
Mrs. Somers demanded. Why, I don't suppose they'll make any secret of it, Billy stammered in tardy repentance of his hasty speaking. Peggy told me last night she had accepted him. Mrs. Somers turned to rearrange a bowl of roses. She seemed to have some difficulty over it.
Billy, she spoke inconsequently, and with averted head. An honest man is the noblest work of God, and the rarest.
Billy groaned. Do you know, said he, I've just been telling the roses in the gardens yonder the same thing about women. I'm a misogynist this morning. I have decided no woman is truly worthy of being loved.
That is quite true, she assented. But on the other hand, no man is worthy of loving.
Billy smiled. I have likewise come to the conclusion, said he, that a man's love is like his hat, in that any peg will do to hang it on. Also, in that the proper and best place for it is on his own head. Oh, I assure you, I vented any number of cheap cynicisms on the helpless roses. And yet, will you believe it, Kathleen, it doesn't seem to make me feel a bit better. No, not a bit.
It's very like his hat, she declared, and that he has a new one every year.
Then she rested her hand on his, in a half-maternal fashion.
What's the matter, boy? She asked softly. You're always so fresh and wholesome. I don't like to see you like this. Better leave phrase-making to us phrase-mongers.
Her voice rang true. True and compassionate, and tender, and all that a woman's voice should be. Billy could not but trust her. I've been an ass, said he, rather tragically. Oh, not an unusual ass, Kathleen, just the sort men are always making of themselves. You see, before I went to France, there was a girl I cared for, and I let a quarrel come between us. A foolish, trifling, idle little quarrel, Kathleen, that we might have made up in a half hour. But I was too proud, you see. No, I wasn't proud either, Mr. Woods amended bitterly. I was simply pig-headed and mulish. So I went away, and yesterday I saw her again and realized that I still cared. That's all, Kathleen. It isn't an unusual story. And Mr. Woods laughed mirthlessly and took a turn on the terrace. Mrs. Somers was regarding him intently. Her cheeks were of a deeper, more attentive pink, and her breath came and went quickly.
I don't understand, said she in a rather queer voice.
Oh, it's simple enough, Billy assured her. You see, she... Well, I think she would have married me once. Yes, she cared for me once, and I quarreled with her. I, conceited young ass that I was, actually presumed to dictate to the dearest, sweetest, most lovable woman on earth, and tell her what she must do and what she mustn't. I, good Lord, I, who wasn't worthy to sweep a crossing clean for her, who wasn't worthy to breathe the same air with her, who wasn't worthy to exist in the same world she honored by living in. Oh, I was an ass. But I've paid for it. Oh, yes, Kathleen, I've paid dearly for it, and I'll pay more dearly yet before I've done. I tried to avoid her yesterday, you must have seen that, and I couldn't. I give you my word I could no more have kept away from her than I could have spread a pair of wings and flown away. She doesn't care a bit for me now, but I can no more give up loving her than I can give up eating my dinner. That isn't a pretty simile, Kathleen, but it expresses the way I feel toward her. It isn't merely that I want her, it's more than that, oh, far more than that. I simply can't do without her. Don't you understand, Kathleen? He asked desperately.
Yes, I think I understand, she said when he had ended. Oh, Billy, I am almost sorry. It's dear of you. Dear of you, Billy, to care for me still, but I'm almost sorry you care so much. I'm not worth it, boy dear, and I really don't know what to say. You must let me think.
Mr. Woods gave an inarticulate sound. The face she turned to him was perplexed, half sad, fond, a little pleased, and strangely compassionate. It was Kathleen Epps who sat beside him. The 6 years were as utterly forgotten as the name of Magdalene's first lover. She was a girl again, listening, with a heart that fluttered, I dare say, to the wild talk, the mad dithyrambics of a big, blundering boy. The ludicrous horror of it stunned Mr. Woods. He could no more have told her of her mistake than he could have struck her in the face. Kathleen, said he vaguely,
let me think. Oh, let me think, Billy, she pleaded in a flutter of joy and amazement. Go away, boy dear. Go away for a little. Let me think. I'm not an emotional woman, but I'm on the verge of hysterics now for several reasons. Go into breakfast, Billy. I want to be alone. You've made me very proud and sorry, I think, and glad and oh, I don't know, boy dear, but please go now, please.
Billy went. In the living hall, he paused to inspect a picture with peculiar interest. Since Kathleen cared for him, he thought rather forlornly, he must perjure himself in as plausible a manner as might be possible. Please God, having done what he had done, he would lie to her like a gentleman and try to make her happy. A vision in incredible violet ruffles coming down to breakfast saw him and paused on the stairway and flushed and laughed deliciously. Poor Billy stared at her and his heart gave a great bound and then appeared to stop for an indefinite time. Good Lord, said Mr. Woods in his soul, and I thought I was an ass last night. Why, last night in comparison I displayed intelligence that was almost human. Oh, Peggy, Peggy, if I only dared tell you what I think of you, I believe I would gladly die afterward. Yes, I'm sure I would. You really haven't any right to be so beautiful. It isn't fair to us, Peggy. But the vision was peeping over the banisters at him, and the vision's eyes were sparkling with a lucent mischief, and a wonderful half-hushed contralto was demanding of him, Oh, where have you been, Billy boy, Billy boy? Oh, where have you been, charming Billy? And Billy's baritone answered her, I've been to seek a wife, and broke off in a groan. Good Lord, cried Mr. Woods. It was a ludicrous business, if you will. Indeed, it was vastly humorous, was it not, this woman's thinking a man's love might by any chance endure through 6 whole years? But their love endures, you see, and the silly creatures have a superstition among them that love is a sacred thing, stronger than time, victorious over death itself. Let us laugh, then, at Kathleen Saumarez. Those of us who have learned that love is only a tinkling cymbal, and faith a sounding brass, and fidelity an obsolete affectation. But for my part, I honor and think better of the woman, who through all her struggles with the world, through all those sordid, grim, merciless, secret battles, where the vanquished may not even cry for succor, I honor her, I say, for that she had yet cherished the memory of that first love, which is the best and purest and most unselfish and most excellent thing in life.